Welcome to the NXT Podcast, your home for weekly NXT reviews and insight.
The beautiful part of NXT is that when one dream ends, another dream begins.
Find all of your NXT news, recaps, and analysis right here. So with that being said, we only have one question for you.
Are you ready?
We thought so. Let's get the show started right now.
Welcome to the NXT Podcast. Once again, I am your host. My name is Zachary Smith. You look fantastic today. I love that shirt on you. I told you it would look good. Now, I am here for NXT this week, which was a very interesting show, setting us up for NXT TakeOver In Your House, which is this Sunday. Feels like that crept up on us out of nowhere, but it's finally here. Hopefully we get an interesting TakeOver set. It looks different than the shows have previously. It's been one of the problems with some of the pay-per-views is that they look like they're in the Performance Center, which they are. But we had a very interesting edition of NXT this week. It felt like a go-home show in that we had a lot of setup for the matches, obviously, that are going to happen on TakeOver. Didn't have a ton of in-the-ring action with our competitors. We had a lot of video packages, so on and so forth, to keep everything kosher and keep everything set up and feeling important. We added a match or two as well, so I'm excited to go over that with you. Now, as you know, generally, here on the NXT Podcast, we cover the news and the notes that are going on in wrestling in general. Now, given everything that is going on, there's not a ton of wrestling news that feels very important, given, well, everything. So we don't have a ton of news to go over. Really, the only thing that I have seen is, or that we're going to talk about here on the show, is that the WWE is looking to hire back some of the people that they fired. If you have been listening to the podcast since I took over, you'll know that I wasn't a huge fan of that decision, but here we are. And they're trying to hire everybody back for a much lower rate than everybody got when they were first working for the company. So essentially what we've done is we have fired a bunch of our employees in a time when they probably needed a job the most, and then we're nice enough to bring them back, however, at a highly reduced rate for everyone. And really the only thing I could say about that is that that might look good on a business ledger, it might look good in a gains report, it might look good as opposed to the losses you'll have for that year, but something like that can do damage to your brand as a whole. If you try and lowball people and you are going to fire people at the drop of a hat and try and bring them back for less money, people are less likely to sign with you going forward. And you can only do this so much before you're not trusted as much. And the problem now is that there are alternatives. There is Impact, there is AEW, there is Ring of Honor. So once all of this has kind of subsided, there will be other wrestling companies for people to work for. And maybe WWE is used to treating people however they want to treat them because they're the only game in town, but that's not the case anymore. Now there's other places for people to go. And you can only push people so far before they're going to take that alternative. So you can keep doing that if you really want to, but when you start losing business after this comes out, then that's really on you and you have nobody else to blame. The only other thing is I would like to remind you that in the midst of cutting a ton of people and furloughing people and trying to bring them back at a reduced rate, which you would think would be the sign of a company that is in trouble, WWE is on track to make the most money they have ever made. I want you to really think about that. During the days of Hulkamania, when Hulkamania was running wild, the first WrestleMania in 1985 that Vince had to mortgage his house for, and it was a huge success. Later WrestleManias that took place in three different cities, through the era of Stone Cold and The Rock, Stone Cold being the biggest star that's ever set foot into a wrestling ring for the time he wrestled, The Rock filling in for Stone Cold in that era when he had to step away, The Rock later becoming one of the biggest movie stars ever, to John Cena and Edge and the SmackDown 6 and The Undertaker, all the way through to now. There has not been a period in this company where it was making more money. A lot of that has to do with, say, the Fox deal for SmackDown that I would imagine they're regretting about now. A lot of it has to do with the network and everything else that they're doing. But the point stands, while the ratings are going down and down and down and down, the WWE is making more and more and more money. Also, their Saudi shows help a lot with that. So if you have this schedule set and you're going to keep doing Saudi shows, you're going to keep having the network, you're going to keep having the Fox money, I don't understand why you would need to try and bring everybody back for a fraction of what they made. But what do I know, you know? I'll tell you what I do know. I'll tell you what I do know, though. I know NXT. I know that pretty well. And we had a pretty good show here to set up for TakeOver, again, this Sunday on the network. And so we start right into it, and we're plugging the In Your House, very cool logo for NXT In Your House. It's going to help make NXT feel different than the other brands. A lot of Raw and SmackDown has adopted some of the things that NXT has done, and it kind of makes all the shows look the same. And so having In Your House, if we actually have a set, we actually have it look different, I think that'll be exciting and it'll help a lot. And obviously we have the crowd of Performance Center attendees again who help a ton. That's been the biggest change amongst the three shows and really couldn't have asked for anything that was going to help the show more. And we're starting immediately, and Candice LeRae comes out first. She's got a new theme song, the same as Johnny, and her theme slaps as well. She immediately looks annoyed at all the Performance Center people in the crowd, because she's great. And she kind of walks around the ring as everybody boos her, as I'm sure they were instructed to do. And you can see in front of the crowd, they're social distanced, and they were tested before they came in the building. According to WWE, nailed that, WWE. And there's almost a hockey-style divider that keeps the crowd from the wrestlers, obviously for safety. And I like that for safety. However, being a wrestling fan as long as I have, I know that eventually somebody's getting thrown through that divider. When Bobby Lashley and Drew McIntyre were fighting on Raw, I believe one of them got thrown into it. But if I know wrestling like I think I know wrestling, and I think I know wrestling, eventually somebody's getting thrown through those dividers. And I can't wait. And then Mia Yim is out next. We've had issues between Keith Lee and Mia Yim and Johnny Gargano and Candice LeRae, so we're getting a singles match to try and settle some of this. Moro says that she has branded her and Keith Lee Yimitless, which is just a terrible name, you guys. It's so bad. I hope that that's the only time we ever hear it, because that's real bad. And Candice jumps Mia before the match even starts and starts slapping her before the bell. Bell rings and Mia takes over. It's a pretty even match throughout. And this match early with Candice already makes Mia feel like a bigger deal than she did the entire match with Charlotte Flair, because Candice actually looked like she was being hurt and that she was in trouble at some point. So that actually helps get somebody over. It's not just winning and losing that has put somebody over. That's making them look like a big deal in the match, and apparently Candice LeRae is better at that, or the story that they're telling is just better with Candice than it was with Charlotte. You would think you would do that with your NXT champion, but again, what do I know? And so Mia and Candice continue their match. They make it to the outside, and they're fighting outside, and it turns out it's a double countout, which in general is a super lame finish, but I understand it with the story that they're telling. They just wanted to have another step in the story and didn't want to have a conclusive finish yet. I would assume that it would have been Candice LeRae winning, but they didn't want to go through with that yet, so they did the double count out. Whatever. They crash into the Titantron in the middle, and that panel of it glitches out. I always love that their equipment is so sensitive that if you touch it too hard, it's just going to glitch. And as they're fighting up by the Titantron, Dakota Kai runs out. She kicks Mia Yim. Raquel Gonzalez comes out as well. They start brawling, and then Shotzi Blackheart comes out, and I believe Tegan Nox as well, and a big brawl ensues. Mia and Candice are eventually separated by referees, and then Johnny Gargano comes out to check on Candice, and then Candice hits Mia in the back while she's not looking, and so we're up near the ring apron. Keith Lee comes out, and Johnny and Candace run back into the ring because they're great heels. And Keith Lee helps Mia Yim up, and they get into the ring. Heels clear the ring. And we hear over the PA, I'm not sure who said it, they said, per William Regal, this is now a mixed tag match. I miss actually seeing William Regal. He's the best general manager since, I think, Eric Bischoff on Raw. And he doesn't tend to get overly involved into storylines, and I think that helps a lot. And we're back from commercial, and it's going to be Mia Yim and Candace starting, and Johnny is wearing basically jeans, a white shirt, and a white jacket, and Johnny is complaining because he wasn't ready for a match, and he's not dressed for one, because he's a great heel. And Keith Lee chases Johnny down, and basically military presses Johnny over his head. While he has him over his head, Candace jumps onto Keith Lee's back to try and stop him, but then Keith Lee just walks both of them on his body up to the ring, throws Johnny into the ring, and then just calmly climbs to the apron with Candace on his back, gets Candace off his back, and Mia Yim deals with Candace. That was really cool. NXT's doing a good job ever since Survivor Series of showcasing Keith Lee in different ways. I haven't seen that before. It makes Keith Lee look like a beast. That's a great way to get somebody over just before the match even starts. And we have Mia Yim and Candace wrestling, and then eventually Keith Lee and Johnny pop into the ring. They're not the legal team, but they're both in the ring, and Johnny is selling big time for Keith Lee. Keeping in mind, this is going to be the NXT North American title match at TakeOver In Your House. Keith Lee will defend against Johnny, and Johnny's flying around for Keith Lee. Keith Lee has Johnny set up for, it looked like it might have been a spirit bomb, but it first looks like Johnny's just hitting Keith Lee in the eye. It turns out that he was hitting Keith Lee in the eye with his car keys, which makes sense. He was just dressed in street clothes, and that's certainly a dastardly thing to do. So he hits him in the eye with the car keys, and in the confusion, Mia Yim's back in the ring. Candace sneaks in and rolls up Mia Yim for the win, and the heels win and escape. So that's a creative finish. It didn't show Keith Lee and Johnny Gargano too much in the ring, so we save something for TakeOver and establish Johnny as a great heel challenger, which you have to do. As Keith Lee's reaching from inside the ring to out, Johnny runs and kicks Keith Lee's hand against the post, and Keith Lee's selling that while Johnny poses outside with the NXT North American title. He's, of course, careful to lay the title down right at the end of the NXT In Your House logo on the floor. And as I said, this Sunday, Keith Lee's going to be defending the title against Johnny. If Keith Lee's going to lose the title, if they maybe want to move him up to the main roster at some point, I think Johnny is the guy to take it. He's great as a heel. It wouldn't feel like a step down for Keith Lee, to lose it to him. I think that might be the right move. I love Keith Lee, but it might be time to move that over to Johnny and continue that story. Maybe move Keith Lee up to the main roster. So, we'll see. I'm not sure if that's what we're going to end up doing, but we'll have to tune in Sunday. We have a recap of Karrion Kross and Ciampa from the past few weeks in that setup, also taking place at TakeOver. Ciampa says, Kross, I want you to bring your A game because I have a hunch that my A game is that much better. I promise you this, I'm not going to be the last one you attack, but I will be the one that you remember. He says, there's Special, and then there's Tommaso Ciampa. That should also be an interesting match. Conventional wrestling logic tells you that Ciampa is going to lose that match, but it should help Karrion Kross a lot being in there with somebody who is a main eventer, who is a big deal. And so we have an interview with Dexter Lumis backstage, and he's initially asked about the NXT title match of The Dream and Adam Cole. And Dexter Lumis is quiet, and he's not talking, and then he walks off screen, and he comes back with art equipment, basically a couple pieces of paper clipped to an easel, and then it looks like drawing equipment. And Dexter is not talking, but apparently he is drawing. What? before I have time to process it, it cuts away, and it's an interview earlier of Drake Maverick as he's entering the building. He says that he is feeling no pressure at all, because today's the day. It could be the best day of my life, or the worst day, and I don't know. I could be cruiserweight champion. I could finally have the cookies at catering that I could never have, you know, because I was worried about the workout and the diet, but now I can. I'm excited because I'm at the NXT casino table and all my chips are in. I don't know what's going to happen. Could be the best or worst day, and that's the beauty of it. That was a great promo. He's done some of his best work since this gross storyline has started, and his promos have been really good and very entertaining. We find out that Adam Cole is going to defend the NXT title against the Velveteen Dream in a backlot brawl takeover. We got a recap of sorts of that. Cole is getting into a stretch limo with the Undisputed Era members who are taking him to celebrate back from June 1st. They're celebrating that he has been NXT champion for, I believe, a year at that point, and that he's the greatest NXT champion there's ever been. And it cuts to the Dream who, I'm not making this up, he's rollerblading outside. Like you do. He's rollerblading, which is exactly how you would think the number one contender would be spending his time. And he talks about all the times that Cole screwed him over. Tried to break my back, having the Undisputed Era attack me. He said, a happy NXT is Dream's NXT. Cuts back and the Undisputed Era is out to dinner. They're toasting with champagne. Adam Cole says, Undisputed Era is the best thing I've done. This cheers is to 1 year of me being the greatest NXT champion of all time. Cuts back to Dream. He's been doing a lot of thinking. You don't think that Dream can handle a four-on-one situation? Dream says, I have a number for you. He says 24. He says, I am only 24 years old and I'm already a superstar. He talks about Cole being, I'm your new reality. Dream over. Dream talks to him. Dream has his assistants bring him a mirror, kicks them out, and goodness gracious, when you know it, he says, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's going to be the greatest of them all? And it changes from Dream's reflection to what is clearly supposed to be Prince. It's as close as you can get to Prince without probably being sued for using his likeness. And this Prince, who's not Prince, the mirror formerly known as Prince, says, it will be you. I don't know why that was in here, but I laughed, I guess. You know? That's Prince is just talking to him. It was hilarious. It's so weird. And I don't know. Wrestling's weird sometimes. Braun Strowman won tag titles with like a 10-year-old. Who cares? And this is Dreams is he's going to walk away with the NXT title, or Dream cannot challenge for that title again as long as Adam Cole holds it. I touched on this last week, but I think that that's a very smart stipulation to put on it because it raises the stakes in general, but if you were to say the Dream has to win or he can never challenge for the NXT title again, I think that's going to be a lot less likely that he's going to lose. It's going to kind of tip the hand that they're probably not going to run a story where he can't challenge for the title again. But with the stipulation that you either win or you can't challenge Adam Cole again, I still think that Dream is going to win. But if he doesn't, that's fine, because whenever Adam Cole loses the title, you can put the Velveteen Dream back in. And if they had another match where Dream lost, I don't know that you would want to have the Dream challenge for the title again. So it's a smart stipulation when you really think about it. And so that's our lead-up for the NXT title match. Hopefully, with a crowd, that will be a better match than it was last time. I suspect that it will be. And so we find out tonight that Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch are taking on Bobby Fish and Roderick Strong, and then a mystery team. And the winners of this triple threat tag match become number one contenders for the tag titles, currently held by Imperium. And we cut back to Dexter, who is still standing there with the interviewer. So if you really think about it, this interviewer asked Dexter Lumis a question. He didn't look at her, walked off screen, came back with art supplies that presumably he's been bringing with him this whole time, it just hasn't used because nobody's asked him a question. Everybody's just been super rude to him. He came back with those art supplies, started drawing a picture, and that interviewer had to just stand there and watch him color a picture. Dexter has done a lot of creepy stuff. I can't imagine something quite as uncomfortable as watching what is clearly an insane man just drawn. So I don't know if Triple H had him sign his contract and he had already had the art equipment, or he's nervous about speaking, and so he was like, let me bring this art equipment so I can express myself. I don't know. But we're back to Dexter, and he's completed his drawing, and it's kind of a cartoon-style drawing of him driving a car, and members of the Undisputed Era are in the back of that car tied up as he's driving again. That was weird. So presumably we're continuing the story with Dexter Lumis and Undisputed Era some way. And Dexter seems to be unhappy with them. Or maybe he's not unhappy with them. That might just be how he looks at everybody, is a potential person to put in the back of his truck with rope around them. So like maybe that's like a sign of respect from him. I don't know. Could be. You don't know either. That dude's crazy. You don't know what's going on in there. But I really like Dexter Lumis. I didn't love this. I don't know what this art thing is. I hope they're not doing that for forever. I feel like he'd be creepier if he talked. But it creeped me out, so I'll give him that. And we cut, and it's Bobby Fish and Roderick Strong out first. They're followed by Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch. Side note, if you don't follow Oney Lorcan on Twitter, you need to. He types every tweet in all caps. He's a crazy man, and it's fantastic, so you need to go do that. And it turns out the mystery team is Breezango, Tyler Breeze and Fandango, with a very them entrance. It's a picture of the moon on the Titantron, and they are both silhouetted astronauts coming in from the right and left, pretending they're not in gravity, and then the lights come on and it's them. And the rules are what they generally are, one man from each team in the ring at a time, so you have three men in the ring at the time and three men on the apron. The first team to score a pin or submission will become number one contenders. And it's great to see Fandango back. He had an elbow injury, and they say on commentary that he wanted to get back in the ring, so he rehabbed the elbow rather than getting surgery. And so now he's back, obviously, in the team. And it's great to see him back because the main roster didn't really seem to know what to do with Fandango. He debuts at WrestleMania against Chris Jericho. Can't have much of a better debut than that. And then it feels like they didn't really know what to do with him after. He had taken all these dance lessons for that weird gimmick they gave him. And what do you know, he became immensely popular. The WWE didn't like it, apparently, and didn't feel like they created it. So they started nixing it, and then he kind of wandered aimlessly. But here in NXT, they at least have something to do with him and Tyler Breeze, who are very talented and can actually do things and once they're utilized. So here we are. And so it cuts to the crowd during this match where Dexter Lumis has now snuck out into the crowd. He's behind the hockey divider, just looking creepy like he does, you know, just looking creepy with his face. There was his creepy, creepy face. At one point, Fandango sets up for a DDT. In the midst of doing the DDT, he jumps off of somebody else, kicks them down, hits the DDT. It's great to have Breezango back and actually let them wrestle. This is a really fun match with a lot of spots that your timing has to be perfect or everything gets ruined. And from what I saw, their timing was really, really good. Eventually, Fandango hits a top rope leg drop on Bobby Fish, and Breezango win. My first thought was Fandango needs a new finisher, not that top rope leg drop, because that's going to cause him problems down the road with his back. Hulk Hogan had that finisher just from the mat, and it messed up his back. That top rope one hurts my spine watching him do it. But great return for Breezango, feels like a big deal. Great match and an interesting set of challengers for the tag titles. Not a team that I suspect will necessarily win, but they should have a really good match with Imperium. I'm not sure. They didn't say that they were adding that match to TakeOver, but I presume that it's going to happen at a later date. So Breezango are celebrating in the ring. Imperium comes out to the entrance ramp as they're celebrating. And so they're having a stare down. And then, without music, Malcolm Bivens comes out with his new team. They said two names. I didn't get them down in time. It's kind of like Akam and Razor. Except I don't know that they have a team name yet. And then they have a three-way stare down. I still don't understand this Malcolm Bivens team at all. And I couldn't care less about them. I've seen them sparingly. And when I haven't gotten any pertinent information about them. I've just heard vague things. And I keep seeing Malcolm Bivens. Could it be interesting? Yeah. Will it be? It doesn't seem like it. But I don't know. They look intimidating. And they've done some interesting work before, so I don't know, maybe we'll get something, but you gotta do something with them or introduce them to me in some way, because right now it feels like a team that's not even signed or is not even in that picture, just kind of inserting themselves, which is wrestling to a degree. That's how a lot of people get into title situations, but I don't know, it just feels like they're shoehorned in here and they're the odd man out. And we have a promo video for the NXT Women's title Triple Threat with Charlotte Flair defending against Rhea Ripley and Io Shirai. First, it's Io Shirai. Appears as though she's underwater, staring at the camera, laughing, looking creepy. Dexter Lumis would be proud. It's translated with subtitles, says, "I don't need anyone. Infinity, void, seeking me, alone, isolated, darkness, emptiness. I love being alone. It makes me stronger. Charlotte Flair should be afraid of me. Rhea Ripley should be afraid of me. Io Shirai will be the next NXT Women's Champion." This package cuts between Ripley, Flair, and Shirai. It also has cut-ins from Sam Roberts, Peter Rosenberg, has Pat McAfee in there, I love that, has Natalya, it has Drew McIntyre. There's a lot of people in this video package, and it really makes the match feel important and like everybody's going to be watching. It cuts to Rhea Ripley being awoken at 5 a.m. by her alarm. She says she wakes up early to eat and work out. She says, "I don't have to work. There's nothing that I have to do, but I like getting up this early and getting started with work." She's now in the car. She says, "I finished 2019 the highest my career has been. And then 2020 was downhill from there." Cuts to Sam Roberts talking about how she's one of the fastest rising stars and that she's the NXT Women's Champion and she's done it in such a short time. And then she talks about how she lost the title and she's been nothing but obsessed with it and she's felt like a loser. And she says, "2020, I don't care. I just want to win." And then we cut to Charlotte Flair, who's in a ring by herself. I believe it was in black and white. She's in the Performance Center training. She says she's nervous. She says it's been a long time since she's been at TakeOver. But she says that, "I am NXT homegrown. So when the crowd was chanting, 'You don't go here,'" she laughs. She says, "Excuse me? I built here." That's not altogether true. They give a lot of credit to Charlotte Flair beating Natalya for the NXT title, which was Charlotte Flair's first title win. And it says, or rather, it has clips of Charlotte beating Natalya and Charlotte celebrating with Ric Flair.
Because she's Ric Flair's daughter, guys.
And that being a big deal and setting off what we see in NXT today. In reality, it was Bayley and Sasha Banks at their TakeOver match, but we'll go ahead and go with this. And so we cut back to Rhea Ripley, and she's arriving at the gym and working out, and she's thinking about stepping into the ring. And she says, "I want my championship back." She starts talking about challenging Charlotte Flair in the first place to take her on at WrestleMania. And she says, "Because it was an opportunity. I saw an opportunity, and it was supposed to be an opportunity for me." And then she goes over that she obviously lost, and now all she can think about is getting that title back. She said, "The NXT Women's title has now been showcased on Raw and SmackDown and NXT, and that's going to make it so much sweeter when I win it back. they cut to Io Shirai. I believe it's Natalya talking about it. She says she became a pro at 16. Somebody else says that Shirai reminds them of AJ Styles, a really, really, really great wrestler that honed their craft outside of WWE. It recaps Io Shirai winning the ladder match to become the number one contender. It conveniently skips over the lame DQ finish that they had on NXT. That's probably smart. You should probably just cut that whole thing out. They don't even mention that. It says that the three most dominant women in NXT today will clash this Sunday at TakeOver. And I'm not a fan of everybody that they used as talking heads for this video package, but I liked it. It gave you the perspective of fans with Peter Rosenberg and Sam Roberts, as well as Pat McAfee. It gave you the perspective of Drew McIntyre and Natalya. It gave you perspective from everywhere. It gave you perspective from the three. All three were very, very different. Charlotte Flair's was not as developed, didn't feel as big as Rhea Ripley and Io Shirai. That's because their characters are more fleshed out. And it made the match feel really important. And I'm really excited to see the match, which is what a video package is supposed to do. And then it cuts to a graphic saying that just added, this Sunday it will be Tegan Nox, Shotzi Blackheart, and Mia Yim in a six-woman tag versus Candice LeRae, Raquel Gonzalez, and Dakota Kai. That does not feel particularly important because Mia Yim versus Candice LeRae is the crux of this match itself, and Mia Yim loses all her big matches. I understand it's agreed on beforehand. I'm not saying that she is losing, but when it comes to the story, Mia Yim's losing. So I presume that the heels will take that one. That's why they did the brawl earlier to set up this match. That's fine. Raquel Gonzalez and Dakota Kai have had issues with Tegan Nox and Shotzi Blackheart. Mia Yim's had issues with Candice LeRae. So on and so forth. This should be a good match. I'm good with it. And then it's time for the main event. It's the Cruiserweight Championship match. It's El Hijo del Fantasma versus Drake Maverick. As a reminder, they were both in different groups. Group A, Group B. You have to face everybody in Group A. If you're in Group B, you face everybody in Group B. People with the best records move on to the final match. Keep in mind, Jordan Devlin is still the Cruiserweight Champion, so this was an interim deal, and eventually they're going to have to face Jordan Devlin. Fantasma goes through his group. Drake Maverick won the triple threat match with Jake Atlas and Kushida last week under controversial circumstances, but nonetheless won it to move on from his group. So this is the finals. Winner wins the Cruiserweight title. And Fantasma is out first. Fantasma's been overshadowed by Drake Maverick, as everybody has, because it's been the best story going. But he's been really impressive in this tournament as well. I don't know, at this point in my notes, I don't know what the finish of this match is going to be. I had my suspicions last week, but I didn't know. And I thought, if Fantasma wins, it might be okay. Because at this point, there's no way that you're bringing Drake this far just to lose. And really the reason that I think that is because there was a commercial for Impact Wrestling that came on, and I believe it's their Slammiversary pay-per-view. And they had a promo video where there's a hooded figure watching a television. And it's going over the fact that people were recently fired and we wish them the best in their future endeavors. Kind of a just a transparent taking a shot at WWE promo. And then it showed a graphic of different superstars. And it was EC3, Drake Maverick was in there. There were a few people in there. And a lot of people got excited about that promo. I didn't find it particularly interesting. Every time that I've tuned into Impact, I've seen something that's kind of piggybacking off of WWE, and I think if you're in second place, you shouldn't mention the person who's in first, because the person in first probably isn't going to mention you. And I thought it was nothing more than an attempt to get some buzz off of that and to make people think that all these people were coming in, when I think a lot of them aren't necessarily. So for example, I don't think Drake Maverick is coming, because there's no way that the WWE would take this story, would fire him, take this story to its conclusion in a Cruiserweight Championship match, and then just let him go and go to Impact and let them get that buzz. If WWE has something they think they can work with, there's no way they're just letting it go to Impact. I don't know if EC3 is interested in going back to Impact or if he's trying to go to AEW or just trying to do his own thing right now, but I very highly doubt that all those people in that Impact commercial have already reached a deal with Impact. I think they just used the likenesses because they had been in Impact before. So I wasn't excited about that promo. I rolled my eyes and it felt like it insulted my intelligence a little bit. If that were to come true, that would be great, but I don't think it will. Point is, I think at this point in my notes, again, not knowing the finish, that Phantasma winning might not be the worst thing for a couple reasons. Phantasma's been really good in this tournament. He's really good in the ring. He could be a really good cruiserweight champion. And Drake Maverick, in the storyline, needs to win to keep his job. But it's at this point in my notes that I realize that even if he loses, he's keeping his job. And I think if I have the choice between being the cruiserweight champion and just being on NXT with a great story behind me, I would much rather be on NXT. Because the cruiserweight title is a big deal. I love the original cruiserweight tournament. I generally love the cruiserweight matches, but it's not presented as a big deal. 205 Live isn't, the cruiserweight title isn't, it just isn't. And the cruiserweight title can kind of be a hindrance to you more than it can be a help. And that's a shame, it shouldn't be that way, but it is. And so I almost at this point in my notes think that the best scenario would be Phantasma winning the cruiserweight title and then Drake Maverick just being on NXT, because Drake Maverick is now the kind of character and is hot enough that he can be in his own storylines. And I think if there were a real crowd here, people would be going nuts for Drake Maverick at this point. And he's earned that. He's doing the best work of his career that I've seen. So at this point, I'm just trying to figure it out. And Drake Maverick is out next. And I'm nervous at this point. This is, like I said, it's my favorite run of his career. I don't love how this story came to be. I've been vocal about that, you guys remember. But here we are. Whether he wins or loses, at this point I've convinced myself that he's going to stick around. Probably because I didn't want to face the fact that he might not be. So it looks like the ref holds up the cruiserweight title. And it was hard to see while it was on the stand, but it looks like they changed the strap of the belt itself, so the belt itself is darker. There's a hint of purple in it, but it looks so much better in black. Purple's my favorite color, but it doesn't make a good belt strap. It kind of feels cartoony. That's why the Universal title looked ridiculous when it was red, and not much better when it's blue, and that's why the WWE title looks better. It's one of the reasons the 24/7 title doesn't look good, but the U.S. title does. It's one of the reasons that people prefer the old white strap Intercontinental title over this Ninja Turtles looking Intercontinental title they have now. I don't hate it, but that's why people prefer it. A lot of it has to do with the belt strap itself. A lot of it has to do with the centerpiece and side pieces. Now it looks like a real title belt. And so Phantasma and Drake shake hands before the match, but Phantasma tries a quick roll-up that doesn't work. And the announcers say that Drake Maverick's entire 19-year career flashed before his eyes. And Drake looks over at Phantasma. He's like, really? Really? They're going through the match. It's very good. Drake Maverick's elbow is still wrapped, which is continuing that story that he had with Kushida, going against Kushida 1 week, and then Kushida and Atlas the next. And Kushida was really focusing on the arm. That's a good story that they're telling. It really helps put Kushida's arm bar over as well. It's a move that continues to hurt you even after you fought him. That really puts that over as dangerous and like a big deal. And so, this is a very good underdog match with Drake Maverick not necessarily being able to measure up to Phantasma physically, but Drake Maverick won't quit. And I believe Phantasma hits him with a powerbomb or something, goes for the pin, and Drake kicks out, and Phantasma can't believe it. He keeps thinking that Drake is done, and he doesn't know what to do in some points, but he's not. He's put him in a couple submissions, and Drake is just screaming, and he's screaming, I'm not quitting! I'm not quitting! Don't you dare stop it! I'm not quitting! The whole time he's in the hold, so that's clearly not going to work. He won't go down for a pin. It seems as though Phantasma is almost hesitant to hurt Drake Maverick. He realizes he has the advantage, but he doesn't want to abuse it. But then Drake is in the corner, and then he slaps Phantasma in the face, which is rude, and he says, I'm not quitting, and then that spurs Phantasma on to start beating him down a bit. Phantasma ends up outside the ring with his back on the apron. And two of the masked men come out in suits and masks. They walk kind of up to Phantasma. They don't attack him. That's probably important. They just stare him down. And then from off camera, Drake jumps out of the ring onto the masked men, starts beating them down. They run to the back. By this point, Phantasma's gotten back at the ring. Drake Maverick slides in, checks for him one more time. And Phantasma attacks him, hits the Phantom Driver, and he wins. So, Phantasma is your new Cruiserweight Champion. It's at this point I stopped watching, and I went to Twitter, and I checked NXT. And I checked the latest, because that would have covered the main event, as this is the last segment. And before the next thing happens, everybody was sad and furious. I understand that. I would have been too if I hadn't thought about it more in preparation for this show, knowing that this was going to be a big deal. People were angry that you took Drake Maverick to this point in the story and then just dropped a loss on him when he could have won. I understand that. People were mad that Phantasma got it and Drake didn't, and that we just weren't going to see Drake Maverick anymore, and they felt like they had been taken for a ride. That's also fair. I only think this the way I do because I had time to think about it, and I thought that there's no way they're letting this story go, especially after Impact put out their commercial making people think that he was going. I suspect that had a lot to do with it. So Phantasma is celebrating as new champion. I'm very happy for him. This is a great debut. Think about it. He debuts on WWE NXT. He goes right into this Cruiserweight tournament, wins the whole thing, and now he's Cruiserweight champion. As I said, it's not always a help to you, but he might be able to do something with it, and it makes him feel like a big deal coming right out of the gate as the Cruiserweight champion. So Phantasma's celebrating with his new championship as Drake is sitting in the middle of the ring. Crowd is cheering really hard for Drake as he's just sitting in the ring getting emotional. The crowd starts chanting, "We still love you," and they're banging on the hockey supports. Drake looks into the camera and he says he wants to thank everyone for their support. He looks emotional. He's walking around the side of the ring, thanking people, looks downtrodden, but is coming to maybe some kind of acceptance. And the announcers, some of them say, I don't even know what to say. I'm heartbroken. And as Drake is on the ramp with his facing the ring, rather, seems like he's taking one last look at the ring where he's done some of the best work of his career after they finally gave him a chance. And he's just staring at it. He's getting emotional. His hands are on his knees. He's walking. And Triple H comes out. No music. And he puts his arm around Drake, shakes his hand, hugs him. And then Triple H holds out a clipboard and takes a pin out of the top of the clipboard. Everybody starts cheering because they know what's happening. And Drake signs. And Triple H signs. And what do you know? Drake Maverick is staying on NXT. So I didn't suspect this would happen. I gotta tell you, I was wrong. I thought Drake Maverick was going to win because of interference by the Masked Men, and it was going to turn out that Drake Maverick was the leader of the Masked Men. I don't know, I guess that could still happen, but point is, I was big wrong. Masked Men came out. Again, looks like it's Phantasma's guys. I don't know, but I knew I was wrong. This is an interesting way to finish it. Drake Maverick takes it all the way to the end. It was a huge underdog story. Couldn't overcome the odds with the Masked Men being a distraction, but he gets to stay on NXT for his efforts. And Drake Maverick isn't going anywhere. The last shot we see is Drake Maverick holding the clipboard over his head with the new contract. And like I said, without the Cruiserweight title and just being on NXT, there's going to be a lot of opportunities for Drake Maverick. You've seen that he can have great matches. He can have great underdog matches. He's great at selling. He's got a great fire as a babyface. It's going to be really interesting to see him go through NXT. He is a much smaller guy. When he hits the ropes, he hits the second and bottom rope. He doesn't even hit the top rope. And he's great at selling for bigger guys, and he's going to be one of the smaller people on the roster. But people really believe in Drake Maverick right now. He's one of the best that you have not only in promos, but in the ring. I'm excited to see what he does next. I'm also excited to see what we do next with Phantasm. Presumably, at some point, we're going to have Phantasm versus Jordan Devlin to decide the real cruiserweight champion. That should be a really good match, and I'm excited to see what Phantasm does as well. What else I am excited for is NXT TakeOver In Your House. That is this Sunday. I hope that we get an In Your House on the set so that Johnny can jump off it like he said he wanted to. I hope that it's a different production for NXT and that it comes off differently. AEW has been knocking it out of the park with making their shows feel different week to week. WWE has not done such a good job. And I feel like In Your House is a great opportunity to finally do that. I'm excited for the matches that are set for TakeOver. I don't know if we're getting more or if this is the card we're sticking with. TakeOver usually has a shorter card than a general WWE pay-per-view would, so I think that might be all we're getting. I don't know. I'm excited. And so we close this week with Drake Maverick, the newest member of NXT. And folks, that means my time is almost up. So first, I want to thank you for joining me, and second, I want to say that if you would like to hear more from me, I am over on Twitter. I am ZachNXT, that's ZachNXT. As you know, I cover NXT each week as well as the news and notes. Last week, I believe it was, I debuted a controversial segment, and it was just a random thought that I had, and that's that Living Single was a way better TV show than Friends. And I don't need you to weigh in on that. That's just true. I know that. Had another controversial opinion as I was speaking to somebody at work. Spoilers for Avengers Endgame, if you haven't seen that movie that's been out for a very long time. And we were talking about Endgame, and I remember I saw it with my wife, cried like a baby when Iron Man did what he did. Nothing quite as embarrassing as bawling like a child next to your future wife over a superhero movie. But there it was. And as you know, Captain America uses the time machine to go back and be with his lady. And he comes back to the present day as an old man. And they say, "Do you want to tell us about what happened?" He says, "No, I don't think I will." Gives his shield to Sam. And then, presumably, Captain America's done. And I remember everybody saying, and they said at work, that, wow, what a great arc for Captain America. That was really cool. And apparently, I'm the only one that thinks this. But you guys, Captain America's a jerk. Okay, think I'm a nerd, and you're just going to have to deal with it for a second. Let's think about what happened before this. All this stuff with Thanos, all this stuff with fixing the timeline, all this stuff happens. We're finally out of the woods, but the Avengers to this point have gone from one huge threat to another, so presumably something's coming right around the corner is what they would be thinking. Captain America uses this time to go back to be with a lady that he was with for, like, what, a week in Captain America, his original movie, before he quote-unquote died, and then she died of old age? He was with her for a little bit. He went back to the past to just hang out with her. So presumably, there's a Captain America from then, too. He messed up the whole timeline. He leaves his friends as the de facto leader of the Avengers, especially after Iron Man's gone. He just dips to be with a lady that he knew for a bit. Like, what if he got back and she had, like, moved on? Like, she had just found a different guy. She was heartbroken, but she eventually just found a different person. He goes back. He hangs out with her for the rest of her life. And then when she dies, he stays there a bit because he comes back as an old, old man. And then when they ask him, "Hey, what happened?" He said, "Nah, gentlemen don't kiss and tell." Shut up. You literally disappeared for like 10 minutes, and now you're an old man. So if, I don't know, Thanos used one of those stones to make us think we really killed him and then comes back right now, you can't help because you're an old dude now. But don't worry, he handed the shield to Sam, a dude with no superpowers, so we'll probably be fine. Controversial segment of the week, Captain America's a big fat jerk, big selfish jerk who ran away to be with a girl for a bit, who didn't even know if she really liked him or if it was just a romantic thing that they had because he died. He came back as an old, useless man that's not going to be able to help if something else happens. The takeaway I want you to have for this week is that NXT TakeOver In Your House is going to be a really good pay-per-view, and Captain America is a jerk. That's it. That's the important takeaways that I want you to have. This has been exhausting. All right. I'm Zachary Smith. Again, you look fantastic today. Thank you very much for joining me. ZachNXT on Twitter, ZACHNXT. If any questions, comments, concerns, if you want to tell me I'm the worst, if you want to tell me I'm the best, just do that second one. Don't do that first one. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, a lot of the questions end up here on the show. If not, we have a lot of great conversations going on over on Twitter with not only myself, but Ashley, Meredith, Matt, everybody. We're all a big, happy, dysfunctional little family over here. And more than anything, we love wrestling. And we love hearing from you. So hit me up on Twitter. Let me know what you think about Captain America. Let me know that you clearly agree with me and he's a big fat jerk. In the meantime, that has been NXT. This has been Zachary Smith. You've been great, and thanks for listening.